We're back with Rise Up Radio. On Wednesday, the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Community Center held a forum called Ensuring Shelter for Homeless Transgender New Yorkers. This panel was sponsored by several groups fighting for transgender rights in New York, including Fierce and Queers for Economic Justice. The forum featured seven panelists discussing the problems facing homeless transgender people in the shelter system. The conversation focused mainly on the Department of Homeless Services policy of segregating the homeless based on birth gender. Former transgender shelter residents shared their stories of humiliation and harassment and talked about how to make it better.
Transgender activists from Toronto spoke about the success they've had in getting their city government to change its policies. The forum grew contentious as former residents of shelters argued with the Department of Homeless Services representative Simone Almond. Panelists and audience members alike angrily fired questions at Almond. The Department of Homeless Services is reportedly looking at ways to enforce recent legislation that forbids discrimination based on gender identity, but a timeline has not yet been set. Bran Fenner is an organizer with Fierce, a trans and queer youth organizing project in the West Village. She spoke with Rise Up's Christine Min.
So what was Fierce's part in organizing this event?
We were part of the people originally at the table, identifying different problems with the trans community. And so the idea that we had, we meaning QEJ, Queers for Economic Justice, and Fierce, and the Sylvia Rare Law Project, was to do it in a forum style. And also just hearing that folks in Boston and Toronto had successes, we felt this would be a good way to share information.
Did you have trouble getting all the parties together, like VHS and other ones?
Well, with any panel, it's really difficult to get a bunch of folks from different areas together, but it worked out in the end. So,
what do you think are some specific problems that trans youth experience in the shelter system opposed to adults?
Well, as and I'm not sure if people know what Fierce is, but we are a trans and queer organizing project, and we are currently or formerly homeless youth or marginally housed or unstably housed youth. And so just being that there aren't LGBT-specific youth shelters is one of them, right? So there's a few places, and there are maybe about 50 beds right now when 35% of the homeless population are trans and queer youth, right? So that's definitely one immediate problem. Also, within the larger systems that have youth in them, a severe amount of neglect or abuse has been one of the major problems that we've experienced in our community.
Nell got a chance to speak with Dean Spade, founder of the Sylvia Rivera Law Project.
Can you talk about the goals of tonight's event?
Yeah, we basically just wanted to have a forum to discuss the ongoing issue of trans access to homeless shelters in the city, the fact that because the city has policies that basically violate the law against discrimination on the basis of gender identity, the homeless shelters are not meaningfully accessible to transgender clients, and people who do try to access the homeless shelters face heightened violence and discrimination. And so we wanted to have an opportunity to have people who have lived in or are living in shelters, as well as people who are working to reform shelters in New York, and those who work for the government in New York that runs the policies, and also a few folks from other cities where there have been more successful reforms of the shelter system.
And do you think that at this point DHS actually is willing to engage in dialogue? They were willing to send someone here. Does that mean very much?
I do think it means something that they're willing to send someone here, because for years and years trans advocates have been trying to get them to change their policies, and the response has just been sort of like, sue us. And there's been a significant marked change, but that change hasn't come from a voluntary perspective. It's come from the fact that we have a two-year-old law against anti-discrimination regarding gender identity. And so I don't think that DHS is ever going to sort of be proactive on this, that what they're doing is they're responding to a change in the law and to fear of accountability to that law. And I think we'll always have to push to make this happen, but I do think it's positive that they're here. And the individuals who work at DHS, many of whom are really interested in working on this issue, but they also are part of a larger bureaucracy that's interested in not ever improving the situation, because they have so many demands on them. So I think it's a mixed bag.
Yeah. And your Sylvia Rivera Law Project has met with DHS about possible forward
progress on the issue. Have you found them receptive in those meetings?
We've been working with them for about a year and a half in ongoing meetings. We found them a mixture of reactions. We found it on the one hand that they are somewhat interested in complying with the law. On the other hand, they have often have the sort of responses that many people have. You know, trans women shouldn't be in women's shelters because the other women will be afraid of them, or trans people are sexual predators, or how many of these people can there really be? I mean, the same kinds of ignorant responses that any person in our culture would believe. Many people in DHS need to be disabused of, and so part of what we're trying to do is work on informing both the decision makers in DHS and trying to work on broader trainings throughout the department.
Okay, and right now at this point, do what kind of channels do individuals in the shelter system have to, you know, get advocacy and also make complaints, those kinds of things?
If anyone has been is experiencing discrimination in the shelter system or has experienced discrimination in the shelter system, they should immediately contact the Sylvia Rivera Law Project. We provide free legal services, and we can help assist them in making a complaint or filing a lawsuit depending on what they've experienced. And we can be reached at 212-337-8550.
Again?
212-337-8550.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Nell also spoke with Laura Des Hunter, a former shelter resident of 21 months, originally from Detroit.
So can you explain how you got involved in this panel first?
Well, through Diana Olezola from the Coalition for the Homeless, being homeless and working with her and gaining my independence and my housing, she asked me to come back and speak on the panel, being that I lived in the shelter, being that I am transgender, and I'm aware of a lot of the issues. And along with that, I am an advocate in the community.
And what were some of the experiences you had while in the shelter system that you talked about tonight?
From bigotry perpetuated by the staff all the way down to the clients, from administration to security, the sexual harassment, the continuous sexual harassment from men and from staff and from security. It was horrendous at times. It was so traumatizing to wake up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom and just see men standing there using the restroom, from the showers, taking a shower, and guys opening up the shower curtain on you. I mean, as the people on the radio can't see, but I do have breasts. And just having to be in an atmosphere where there's 900 different men looking at you like a piece of meat. It's very difficult and tumultuous.
And so what do you think are some of the biggest problems that could be addressed proactively at this point by DHS?
Proactively, I think that they need to systematically have cultural sensitivity trainings from administration all the way down to the individuals who assign beds, and not so much specifically transgender cultural sensitivity trainings, but just human cultural sensitivity trainings. Being a service provider, when you go into work, you have no opinion. You don't have a face. You're there to provide a service, and that's all that should matters.
So DHS was represented here tonight. Were you satisfied with the responses that the representative of DHS provided to questions?
Absolutely not.
You want to say more about what they didn't, you know, satisfy?
Well, basically, when DHS came, they don't have a timeline in which they're... Well, the question was asked, do they have a timeline in which they are going to implement different strategies to help further assist transgender individuals? The DHS representative didn't have a timeline. Even so, when I asked the question to the DHS representative, was this forum posted in their shelter so that trans individuals can come out and have their voices heard? She didn't post them. I asked her, does she even go into the shelters, or is there a DHS representative who've done demographics of the transgender individuals in the shelters? You know, sort of like a supply and demand type thing. How can you say you're going to provide services for a community and you don't even know how many people are in that community or what are the needs of that community? Aside from having a forum here, they need to have these forums in the shelters where the people who are specifically and directly affected can be heard.
What about shelters system sort of officials who say that because the number of adults in the system has increased so dramatically over the past half decade or so, it's hard to deal with the growth, let alone the many issues that deal with sensitivity to all the clients?
Well, it's amazing how they say how the shelter population has grown. However, DHS receives a certain amount of money per person that sleeps in the shelter every night. from the state or from whoever provides these funding. I'm sure, being that they've received this funding, they can afford to provide cultural sensitivity trainings, just like they have services for women who are affected by domestic violence, just like they have services for people who are affected by drug abuse. They should have particular programs and services for those who are affected by all walks of life. Because people who are homeless, there is no specific individual who is homeless. There is no makeup or no formula for homeless people. They come in all different shapes, forms, and sizes. And if you're going to be a facility that services homeless people, you need to be able to service the entire population.
And what about people who have presented the idea of a transgender shelter itself for transgender individuals only? What's your position on that?
Personally, my position on a transgender-specific shelter, I'm kind of like straddling the fence, because through my experience, being that I was in the shelter system for 21 months, in a men's shelter with over 900 other men in Ward's Island, the experience kind of made and molded me into the person that I am today. I'm more positive, self-affirmed. My self-esteem is so high. I feel like I can do anything. I can conquer the world because of my experiences, because of the bigotry and the discrimination that I face in the shelter system. I don't know about a transgender shelter, because me as a heterosexual woman, and most transgender individuals consider themselves as such, we don't want to be separated. We don't want to need to be segregated. You know, there isn't any all-exclusive type of anything. In the world, they're transgender individuals, they're heterosexual individuals, they're white, they're black, and they all mix together. Why do we have to be separated?
Okay, well, thanks so much for your time.
You're so welcome. Thanks for talking to me.
That was Lourdes Hunter, a transgender woman who is a former shelter resident in New York City, originally from Detroit. We did ask the Department of Homeless Services representative if she would speak with us, and she declined to comment for the radio. Next, we'll hear from Jake Pine, who's a coordinator of the Trans Shelter Access Project at a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community center in Toronto called 519. And Jake spoke with Rise Up's Caroline Friedman.
We're a direct support to the shelter system to assist them in making their services accessible to trans people. So we do policy development with the management. We train the staff and we train the residents in working with and living with trans people. We also do another thing, which is developing skills and experience inside the trans community. So we hire trans people that don't have the skills to do this work, and we train them and give them skills that they can take with them into social services jobs.
What has the response been by the people you've trained? How have they felt about it before the training as opposed to after the training?
Overwhelmingly good. I think every shelter is different and has its own barriers. But overwhelmingly, it's been good. And one of the stats that I mentioned in the forum is that 100% of shelters that have received our training believe that integrating trans people into shelters is possible and is a good idea and is the best solution. And 100% of shelters that have never received our training, the ones, like, there are shelters that don't call me back, 100% of them believe that it's not possible to integrate trans people into the shelters. So the recent report that is coming out says that training makes all the difference.
Those are pretty powerful statistics. What kinds of things do you do to train these individuals who work at the shelters?
We do really basic stuff like definitions. We talk about HIV/AIDS, we talk about sex work, about homelessness, and about living in a shelter. We do a bit about trans history, but the thing that we like to do a lot of is really practical, hands-on problem solving. So we look at problem scenarios, like in a women's shelter, if a woman who has a history of abuse has her abuse triggered by the presence of a trans woman who she's perceiving to be male, we sit down with shelters and we brainstorm what do you do about that. We're at a really different stage in Toronto than in New York. Like, we're at the stage where trans women are already in the women's shelters, and so there's a whole new set of problems coming out. And so we do multiple trainings for agencies, like 2, 3, 4, 5 trainings for the same agency.
So do you think New York has to take several more steps before they can reach the level that Toronto's at in terms of acceptance of transgendered people into their the correct homes?
Yeah, like I said to Simone Elmont tonight, I think the city needs to take a strong position on it, and it's not possible and it's not acceptable for DHS to not take a position on it. They directly fund those shelters, that even if they're contracting out to nonprofits, they have control They have all the control that they would need in order to implement policy or to force shelters to write policy. One of the things I wanted to say, though, about our work with shelters, when you asked what we do, is the things I listed are the topics, but I think the main thing that we do is, or the main reason that we're so successful is our approach, is that we come in really respectfully and we work with the staff around what their issues are, and we try to make sure they're in a position where they can tell us what their real issues are as well. So we're firm about what policies we support and don't support, but we give a lot of room for the staff to really deal with the issue. Some of the attitudes that trans women are not real women, the staff actually need to work out that issue. They need to talk about it. So we try to create really open atmospheres and try to support staff in their work so they can feel more confident to work with trans people. So I know there have been other approaches where people come in really confrontationally and do a lot of guilting, a lot of blaming with the staff that we have found is not useful at all.
And do you think the residents are more or less accepting than the staff who work at these shelters?
I think their issues are different. In our experience, they both blame each other. So staff often say residents are the problem, and residents say staff are the problem. I think that our workshops with residents are a lot more real, that they're not afraid of saying the wrong thing. They ask us the questions that are on their minds, and staff withhold a lot and are afraid of saying the wrong thing, which means they're not learning as much. But I think what we're asking, residents will be more vocal about their problems, I guess, is the thing. So it's impossible to measure staff's problems with trans people when they're not vocalizing them. I think that we're asking something really different of residents than we are of staff. Like, we're asking them to sleep beside a trans person, to share bathrooms, share showers with people that they may be uncomfortable with. And that's not impossible, or that's something that they need to learn to do. But staff sometimes, who are really supportive of the policies, fail to recognize that they get to go home at night and sleep in their own bed and use their own bathroom, and that they're not being asked to share space with people that they're uncomfortable with.
Although New York is further behind Toronto on this issue, do you think that the kinds of programs that you're running in Toronto could also be run in New York City?
I feel like I'm not the best person to answer that question. Like, I think New York will need to come up with its own strategy, and I think that we can be useful and that we can consult on what's working for us. I think we have a really different government structure and different funding sources and that kind of stuff, so I wouldn't want to be too prescriptive about it. Like, I think transgender New Yorkers are the ones who need to work on this issue, and we'd love to help. Like, the report that is just coming out, consulted with the Toronto trans community to ask about whether a trans-only shelter was the best idea, and the answer from our community was no. The answer from New York may be very different. So maybe in New York, a trans-only shelter might be the best idea. It's impossible for me to know.
Okay, well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Christine got a chance to speak with Jay Toole of the Queers for Economic Justice and the Coalition for the Homeless, also a former shelter resident.
What role did your group play in putting together this forum?
Well, pretty extensive. We are in talks with DHS, along with Dean Spade of the Sylvia Rivera Law Project and Carrie Davis of the Gender Identity Project. So we are in talks with DHS, and we're one of the organizers of this event tonight.
What did you think of it, like, after?
I think it was good. I think any time you can get DHS to come to a table on queer issues is a good thing, you know. I think it went pretty well for the first step.
Do you think the DHS, the representative, was treated fairly by the audience?
You know, that's hard because I can understand, you know, all the feelings that are going on in this room tonight. Some of the things had to be said. Some people had to vent, you know. And I spoke to her afterwards. She said she didn't take it personally. You know, it was DHS questions, you know, and those questions had to be asked.
Do you think this really will help affect change in DHS?
I think this is a major step towards the change, especially having Toronto here, having them speak about how their shelter system is set up for co-ed. It's something that DHS has now said, and we have it on record, that they are going to look into and they will be in talks with. So I think this is a major step. Like I said, getting DHS to this table is one step, and now we just got to move forward. And I know it's going to happen.
Okay. Have you ever been in the shelter system yourself?
Yes, I was in the shelter system for about 3 years, which is a long time. First one I was in was in Brooklyn Women's Shelter, which is the largest one in New York City. And the nickname for that shelter is Bitches with Stems. You know, I used to buy my crack off the security guards in there. It was a pretty miserable place, and this was like 6 years ago. But I was also thrown down a flight of stairs by shelter security. I was called, another dyke coming in that licks, you know. And like they were tired of seeing butchers come into that shelter system. So they were pretty rotten to me when I was there. I then got transferred to another facility on 45th Street, which was pretty good. You know, I was there for a little over 2 years. And, you know, they seemed to understand, you know, the problems. And it was pretty easy to talk to them. You know, not all of them, I'm not saying all of them, but it was a better shelter than most, you know. And now that I'm a shelter monitor and I go into to the 53 shelters that Simone was talking about, it's one of the best shelters that I've seen. You know, most of them are very gloomy, very dark, very scary. And it's hard for our community to survive in them. When I was in the shelter system, I'm with a woman for going on 16 years now, and I wanted to talk about what problems we were facing, being separated, as you know, in one shelter, me in another shelter, our drug addiction. And it was like, no, you can't talk about these issues. We'll talk about it one-on-one. But I could not talk about being a lesbian or being with my partner in a group setting.
Was it really, like, not allowed, or were you just really persecuted?
I'm sure, well, I don't know. I don't think it's DHS rules that they should do this. I think it was that counselor at that moment in time that just said, you know, I don't want to hear about a lesbian, you know. And she didn't feel it was the right format for me to be talking about it.
That was Jay Toole with Queers for Economic Justice, speaking with Rise Up's Christine Min at a forum held this past Wednesday evening at the LGBT Community Center called Ensuring Shelter for Homeless Transgender New Yorkers.
You're at Rise Up Radio, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.